This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Taroa, es un gusto llegar a un capítulo más de este podcast que conecta continentes ahora mismo. Como bien usted sabe, salgo desde la Free FM 89.0, esto desde la ciudad de Hamilton, y para mí es un placer salir desde acá porque puedo conocer un montón de personas que hacen cosas locas, obviamente no locas, ilegales, ¿no, mi señora? No vaya a pensar que promuevo cosas malas, pero sí para poder conectar historias. Obviamente la música es parte de esto que puede unir fronteras, digo yo. Pero antes de presentarles a mis invitados de hoy, quiero contarles un poco también que pueden revisar las redes sociales de Aló Taroa. Tengo historias muy chéveres ahí de personas latinoamericanas viviendo en Nueva Zelanda. Mi última entrevista es de Pacha, que ya está en redes sociales, y la verdad que es espectacular esta mujer quichua de Ecuador, que vende ponchos en la ciudad de Tauranga, que es uno de los lugares turísticos más importantes de la isla norte acá de Nueva Zelanda. Pero bueno, usted ya sabe, puede escribirnos a las redes sociales de Aló Taroa y comentar si le gusta, si no le gusta, si está de buen genio o mal genio. Hay un montón de cambios en el mundo, yo sé, hay un montón de cosas que pasan, pero lo importante es que podamos resistir a este mundo tan noble, ¿no? Salvando las distancias con lo que ocurre. Pero para a quienes se conectan y están aprendiendo español, o también quienes me preguntan, Denise, oye, a veces hablas en inglés y también me motiva a hablar un segundo idioma. No, yo no soy perfecta hablando inglés, ha sido también prueba y error. Pero trato de acercar a las personas y eso es lo lindo del periodismo, creo yo, que fue lo que me ha motivado siempre a estudiar idiomas, que no me lo cuenten, sino demostrarlo. Así que, bueno, ahora sí, con su permiso, voy a leer esto en inglés porque quiero presentar a mis invitados del día de hoy, que llegaron escribiendo al chat del Trust, del Latino Waikato Trust. No saben que yo manejo las redes sociales. un poquito, ¿no? Daniela me va a decir que estoy robando, ¿no? Las redes sociales, sino que, bueno, el trabajo que hacemos desde Trust también es precisamente para la comunidad latina en Hamilton, pero también para quienes se interesan en conocer la hispanidad, ¿no? Luego de tantos hechos históricos, creo que como comunidades y como países lo más noble que podemos hacer es acercarnos. Así que vamos a hablar de algo que a mí me toca mucho y a todos los latinos. Igual, si usted no se siente representado con este ritmo, evidentemente puede decir, no, a mí me gusta el tango, a mí me gusta la cumbia, ¿no? La cumbia, ¿de dónde es? Hay un gran debate cultural, pero lo que sí despierta curiosidades es ¿qué nos mueve siempre al baile a los latinos, ¿no? En mi caso, Ecuador, mis papás siempre estaban bailando cuando yo era chiquita en esas fiestas, como esos memes que uno se duerme en la silla y le tapan. Bueno, eso es real, señores. Eso se vivió cuando, bueno, uno podía dormir si no le robaban. Pero bueno, ese es otro tema. Pero ahora sí, antes de hablar de esto, quiero contar un poco la historia de la salsa, porque además la salsa también es política. Así que quiero compartir esto para ustedes, amigos. Así que just welcome to a new episode of Aló Taroa. The article explained that I want to share today. This article explained that salsa music developed mainly in New York City during the 1960s and the 1970s in Puerto Rican and Cuban. This is really important because one of the crazy things about salsa is that the migration situation in United States. Musicians mix Cuban songs with remix like mambo, cha-cha-cha, guaracha, guaracha, bolero, and jazz to create a genre known today as salsa. Johnny Pacheco, o bien, viejo Johnny Pacheco, and La Fania Records play a major role in popularizing the term and spreading salsa worldwide. The article also describes salsa as more than music. It became a cultural identity for Latino communities. I like to say Latinos communities,
I don't know why, but I feel more close. Especially migrants living in New York, it's strongly influenced by Afro-Cuban traditions, using instruments such as bongos, claves, and the Cuban tree guitar. Also, this article that I would just share this in social media explained that salsa is a fusion of Afro-Caribbean rhythmics mixed with jazz and other musical styles. The origins are deeply connected to African influence in the Caribbean, where African percussion blending with European music traditions. Cuba played a major role in the creation of these rhythms during the 1930s. Later, Cuban and Puerto Rico migrants brought this music to New York during the 1950s, especially to the Bronx, where salsa evolved and became internationally famous. Of course, in this time, we can say thank you, Bad Bunny, as well. I have told why it is so popular, Bad Bunny. I used to sing before to get so famous. It was a little bit crazy, but anyway, according to this article, the word salsa became popular during the late 1960s and early 1970s. The graphic designer Izzy Sanabria and the label Fania Records helped route different Latin remits under one commercial name, Salsa. La Fania Records, I just want to add this, of course, is one of the most important musicians groups related with salsa, and we have a lot of musicians that just create a new way to face life. My favorite, who is still alive, is Rubén Blades. I love that guy. It's also because he got involved in politics as well. Mm. The dance style also involved from Africa, Caribbean, and European dance, as I told you guys. So, after telling you this, because Latin identity in music is not one thing, it has many voices, many histories, and many ways of being heard, I want to introduce today my next guest here. And I want to ask you guys as well, if you listen El Ritmo Collective, what do you think? What do you think that is the kind of words can bring together? That's what I'm telling you today. So my guest, one of my guests, he calls Michael. He started learning Spanish in the Auckland University after his trip in the Philippines. He's from Philippines. Pondering one of the history of the country, he solved the recovery, the ability to speak Spanish. So we will test that here. Sí, señor. Like his great-grandparents and before the Spanish-American War. During his time studying Spanish, he also became fascinated with salsa. As he's seen in the movies, he started dancing salsa in 2019, and he's currently enjoying dancing with the Fabulous Dancers in Hamilton. Also, one of my guests today is Barnes. She was born and raised in Auckland, Aotearoa, of Maori descent. I would just say what she shared today with me. I heard about Zumba about 13 years ago and love it so much. I became an instructor. Wow! Una instructora de samba, de Zumba. I thought since I listen to the music so much, I should at least learn what they are saying. That's how I learned Portuguese, because I used to see a lot of Brazilian shows that I didn't get anything. I have also English, of course, if I want to understand. I have just been teaching myself basic Spanish, muy bien, and it's also said that Maori may have a connection with South America in our Waka Papa, which I found really interesting. I met Michael in Hamilton Salsa dance classes 2 years ago, and now we have been friends ever since. So I'm sharing this because I'm here today with Michael. And Barnes, how are you guys today?
Muy bien.
Muy bien. Sí, muy we are bien. Tasting this. So I didn't explain what is the El Ritmo Collective because we will get there. But first of all, I want to thank you for coming today, for joining me to Alo Aotearoa. It's very important for me to try to connect communities. And also for us, like coming from the other side of the world, I remember that I saw like a TV show, and this journalist was talking about Philippines and the connection with New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And now that you are coming from the Philippines, you have connection with South American people in New Zealand. That's crazy.
It's a small world.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your family, your life in Philippines, and then we can get to the Ritmo Collective thing.
Yeah, sure. My parents are actually here in New Zealand. I currently live with them. And my life in the Philippines is because we didn't come from a rich family. So I grew up in a tiny subdivision, and I have friends all over me. So many people around riding their bicycles, you know, just hanging out like every time like, we finish school. And I would say we tend to eat a lot. Like us Filipinos, we love to eat.
Who does it?
but then, okay, so when I came here and I looked at the portion sizes of the food that people eat here, mainly Kiwis, and I'm like, man, they eat so tiny.
Yeah, I know
oh my
that.
Gosh. I was like, how do you guys not get hungry? So I came to New Zealand at the age of 9 in 2007. And the differences are just so big.
And it's crazy, Mike, because the Philippines and Latin America are deeply connected through a shared colonial past under the Spanish Empire. I'm reading this, but I already knew that. But that's why we share a few words as well, like zapato, yeah. Doble cara,
la mesa, cuchillo,
yeah, and also names.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. If here's a tip, you would know someone's a Filipino here in New Zealand. I could be wrong, but most of the millennial Gen Z, if you look at their name, it's in English, and then their surname is in Spanish.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, that's a Filipino.
Yeah, that's right. And also, I want to introduce today to Barnes. How are you today?
I'm good.
Are you a little bit nervous today or not?
Yes.
You tried to share. What did you do today? How was your day?
Oh, today was really busy. I had lots of family stuff going on, lots of appointments, lots of driving, and I've got studies on as well. So,
where are you from originally?
Originally, I am from New Zealand. I was born and raised in Auckland. And I moved here about 15 years ago to Hamilton as a halfway point between mine and my ex-husband's hometowns. So he was from Rotorua and I was from Auckland, and neither of us wanted to stay in Rotorua or Auckland, so we ended up in Hamilton. Yeah. And we've been here ever since, well, I have been anyway.
And it was like a hard decision to take because you hear a lot of things about Hamilton sometimes.
No, it wasn't hard. Mainly because I keep to myself. I keep to myself, and yeah. But I think most of the time it's all hearsay, what they say about Hamilton.
Barn, you said like in your intro that you are half Maori, or you are part of the Maori family.
I'm mostly Maori.
Yeah. From someone that doesn't understand mostly like Maori thoughts or point of view of life, or like indigenous people, can you explain a little bit about it?
Yes, Maori, in my culture, we are family orientated. We're very family orientated. We love to eat a lot as well.
What do you eat?
That's why we're friends.
What do we eat? Yeah, that's why we're friends. We like a boil up, a good hangi every now and then. I've learnt how to cook it in the oven these days, so I can access it quite easily these days. We don't have to cook it in the ground. But yes, those kinds of foods are really homely for us. It's funny to say homely when I live in New Zealand, but
yeah. That's crazy because food is identity, like it's culture.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things that surprised me in New Zealand. Because in Ecuador, where I've come from, we have like really good local food. And this is like a polemic discussion that I have with my Peruvian friends, or maybe with a few Latin friends. But the best ceviche in the world is coming from Ecuador.
Oh,
that's a fact.
Ceviche? I need to try it.
You would try it, my friend.
I need to try it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ceviche is so good, man.
Like, yeah. But you have to try the Ecuadorian. It's completely different. And we eat with green banana.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know if you hear the patacón. It's like a potato chip. It's fried.
Oh.
Yeah, but we just make the ceviche like that, like a soup, like a lot of, like juicy ceviche, patacón, and popcorn. It sounds crazy, but once you try it, it's the best thing in your life.
Yeah, we have raw fish. It's definitely not the same as ceviche.
No. I will show you after this.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah. So it's crazy how we can connect like cultures. We are coming from different sides of the side of the world, and you get involved with Latin music.
Oh yeah, that's a rabbit hole that we're gonna go into.
Yeah.
So how was that decision, or how it started?
So when I was studying, because I was doing Spanish, and I was watching movies that had salsa dance scenes in them, and I'm like, man, I love how these guys can dip girls, and they look so fancy. I want to do just that. I want to dip girls. And then so
I'm happy that you saw like dancing movies and not, you know, illegal things.
Oh. But so I got into dancing because of it's not just the movies, to be honest, but I wanted to get involved in the culture as well. Because like you said earlier, in Latin America, dancing is quite common. And I would like to get involved as well. So I started to learn to kind of like make my way into that world, you know?
And what was the first thing that connect you with the music? Because sometimes you hear or you saw, but also your body needs to be connected with
that. Oh yeah, 100%.
Exactly.
So when I actually first started dancing, when I attended classes, I wasn't taught the music part of it, because it's just moves based. So we were just taught how to turn, how to lead your partners, but then not so much emphasis on the music. Until I met this guy in Auckland. He's not in New Zealand anymore. His name's Giancarlo. He's from the Latinissimo dance school. But then he's moved to Australia now, and he was telling us all about the conga, you know, the son clave, and the campana, the cowbells. And he was basically getting us to move to the sound of the music, to build up our rhythm, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, and I'm like, oh, I finally get it. Like, it's pattern recognition. When it comes to dancing, you stick to a pattern, and then you move according to that pattern. And once you get that into your head, you don't even have to think too hard anymore, because you're just feeling it. You know, when your brain just stops working and you start feeling it, oh, that's the best feeling. Yeah.
And because it's not the kind of music that that you are able to listen in New Zealand, you know?
No.
I think that first time that I hear something, I mean, not, of course, the community radio station that we are now, but like commercial radio station, they don't play a Spanish song. I think that the first time that I hear was like Bad Bunny, of course, because he won a Grammy, of course. But it was crazy for me to listen something in my language, you know, and I've kind of my remit. It was like, I think that it was the first time that I felt like, okay, maybe this is my home.
The first time I heard a Latin song was all the way back in maybe 2000 and six or before then, in the clubs, and the first song that I heard was Kulo.
Yeah, of course.
I was like, yeah, I like this song, but I did not know what I was dancing to at the time. But now that I've like taught myself a little bit, I'm like,
No, but we dance that.
But I still love the song. I still love the song nonetheless. It's still like one of my favorite songs.
Yeah. No. I have heard like in clubs. I hear a few, like all. I mean, that's crazy. But because sometimes I talk with my friends, like this is all reggaeton music. Like all this cool, you know.
We didn't know that that's what it was called back then. We didn't know that that was called reggaeton or anything. We were just like, this is really cool. I love it.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because the first time that I hear a reggaeton, it's crazy that I'm sharing this, but I was in school because I have to be honest, reggaeton is a really good rhythmic, but also the letters are kind of polemic letters, you know?
R18.
Yeah, exactly. So the first time that I hear one reggaeton song, I was 14 years old, and I told my mom that, Mom, I hear that song, and it says this. And my mom, Denise, no, stop, listen to that. And after that, I would just keep dancing, you know? And if you want to be, maybe in countries like, I think that now it's worldwide, but at the beginning of this kind of music, it was like just a specific countries that we used to dance reggaeton. But it's crazy that now you are getting involved with this. What about salsa? How do you feel that first time that you hear salsa? Do you remember the songs or the name of the artist?
Oh, yeah. So there's Joe Arroyo.
Joe Arroyo.
Dolce Arroyo.
Yeah.
La Rebellion. Oh, my gosh. But then I didn't know what I was listening to because the music was so fast. But I was like, oh, this is cool, but I don't know how to dance to this. Like, you know, when I first started dancing, I was like, oh, this is like a good song to perform to, but I just don't. I didn't get it at the time, and there's also what's his name? Gilberto Santa Rosa.
Gilberto Santa Rosa. Yeah, sí, muy bien. Los propios.
And also Juan Luis Guerra did a little some salsa songs as well, because but he's mainly bachata. But then
he's merengue.
Merengue, yeah.
It's different. I mean, now you are an expert.
Hope.
we can just be specific. And what about you?
I'm the complete opposite. I heard a beat, I loved it, I moved to it, and I wanted more of it. I don't remember what the songs were. I can just remember the beat, the bongos and the duk 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 duk. I can just remember the just the beat. The beat of it and thinking, oh, I need more of that. Yeah.
And now that we just discussed this, I would just say this like really quick in Spanish. Si me escuchan, amigos, súmense a la novela 19.0, que estamos hablando de salsa, un poquito de la historia de la salsa, del reggaetón, de cómo una persona con herencia filipina y también neozelandesa, maori, se conectan con nuestra música. Para mí es loquísimo, la verdad es que me parece muy interesante. Y les invito a que sigan el Ritmo Collective si ustedes quieren cachar de esta historia y si obviamente estás prestando atención en inglés la entrevista. So now I can ask guys, what is the el Ritmo Collective? How did you create this?
So the history of El Ritmo Collective is my vision at the start was to include more dancers from different cities, because right now we have worked with Alina and Fede from Auckland, or from AF Dance, and my friend Michael Chui from Auckland as well. We wanted to bring in more variety from people who have been dancing sensual bachata, and because that is what's popular in Auckland and Tauranga, and I think even in many parts of Australia and different parts of Europe and America. And so we want to bring them here on a regular, well, not regular basis, but on a monthly basis. And I said that, oh, my friends and I, we were thinking, oh, we should definitely like accommodate them, right? And so we had our first workshop last year in November of 2025. And a lot of people came in and we were like, oh, they love it. Like, I think we have to keep doing this. So that's when I thought, oh, if I'm going to continue to do this, this has to be kind of like a business because we need to continue to get funded for this to continue.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, how about we don't just do dance, but we also want people to appreciate the Latin beat and the Latin music in general, you know? And so I had this idea, how about I bring some of the people that I know in Auckland that play in Latin bands, and we'll bring them here, and we can dance together. So I was like, oh, that's an awesome idea. So that's what we're currently working on at the moment.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I have an extra activity to do in Hamilton now. I'm ready.
Oh, we hope to see you soon.
Yeah, of course. I will be there dancing. And what about you? Do you really enjoy also learning? Because for me, maybe we have this connection, but from someone that never heard a salsa, it gets anxious at the beginning because they don't know how to dance because it's a new sound. But for you, it looks like almost native.
I came from Zumba, and the people that I learned to dance from was Maria from Argentina and Carolina from Chile. So they gave me really good foundations of dancing Latino, I guess. It was amazing. I absolutely loved it. And it was right at the beginning when Zumba was just getting into New Zealand, like it had just come into New Zealand. So it was taking off that Latin beat. And, yeah, we had like a really large audience that was into it. And yeah, no, I absolutely loved it. But while we were learning, when I was learning how to be an instructor, they taught us the same thing. They taught us all the beats for merengue. They taught us all the basic steps for cumbia, salsa, even a little bit of samba. Oh, it was amazing. I loved it.
It's crazy.
I loved it.
Also, because this podcast now and this conversation just helped anyone to understand that it's not just representation. Of course, it's part of our identity, but the music around the world is also political and has a history behind of that. From us, salsa was one of the beginnings of just try to denounce what was happening in the Caribbean situation, the Caribbean history, and also South America. But also it's really crazy how we can share this kind of knowledge today. So you are experts now, guys. Because sometimes it's hard for me to just explain, oh, no, this is salsa, this is merengue, this is cumbia, this is bachata. And in Ecuador, also Colombia, we have something really particular. And it's connected now with football. And it's called salsa choque. Have you heard about that?
No.
That's crazy. This is more like quick steps, but mostly they football guys, they used to play that and also dance at the beginning or when they in any game, mostly from Colombia and Ecuador.
Oh,
it's
man.
Crazy. Yeah,
I need to know what that looks like because I was telling
is it
my
like salsa caleño. Caleño, is it similar?
Caleño is from Cali, a city from Colombia.
Yeah.
But this is choque. So people say, I'm not sure, but that this was created, like this kind of movement was created in Colombia. But this side of the north of Colombia is bordered with like the Afro descent. Ecuadorian side as well, so they have this connection with the dancing, you know what I mean? Yeah, so they I don't have a video now, but I will show you guys after this because this is like a new kind of it's really hard to dance that. I mean it took me time to how to describe, like, do the steps, but it's really...
Can you show us after the podcast?
Of course. And now, just to finish this chat, but I'm really happy that I can just share this to my community, also the Latin community, because from us, sometimes we feel like we are on the other side of the world, you know, like just trying to keep alive here. But would you like to invite anyone that is in Hamilton, or maybe they want to be, or maybe just around Hamilton that they want to get connected? Also, because sometimes you don't know what to do in Hamilton.
Oh, yeah. I've been living here for 2 years, you know, like, because I moved here in 2024. And, you know, the population here is much smaller compared to Auckland. And so if we could get connected to these wonderful people, like, by all means, like, send them my way.
Yeah. Like, I've been to the spring festivals here a couple of years in a row now. And you know, I love seeing the cultural groups that perform and all that kind of stuff as well. And, you know, I've seen a couple of bands there as well and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, hey, guys, we're going to put our hands up and, you know, bring you guys to the forefront if you'd like to do that.
If we can get in touch with those people, yeah, man.
Yeah, and we would really like to join our love for the music and the culture and your culture.
No, the culture, I think that culture now is... everywhere, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, like, New Zealand is just an example of that.
It's very diversity.
Mm. And sometimes you tell with someone, I'm any friend, and it's like, how is to live in this kind of environment, you know? Because you have so many thoughts and way to see the life and to just respect that. Mm. It's a challenge. Don't you feel that? Like...
especially if you don't really understand the culture, it's difficult to kind of like mingle with them, because if you're ignorant of it, like there might be some boundaries that you might unknowingly cross.
Yeah.
And when I first came here when I was 9, I had to learn so many things as well, like what is acceptable, what is not acceptable, you know, like what is going to be looked down upon. I had to learn those things sometimes the hard way, but you know, we live and learn.
That's true. Because, like, even if you have a second language, you know, it's like maybe I know how to express this in Spanish, but in English it took me time, or respect the culture where now, you know, because I do in Spanish this podcast, but also a kind of way for me to get connected with this, also with New Zealand, it's the language. So it shows, for me, it's just to show respect as well. And also because I like just to share this kind of ideas and, you know, like for me, it's crazy, this kind of options that you have to my community as well. Do you want to include something else? No. Okay, so this is the last part of this beautiful conversación. ¿Salsa o reggaetón?
Para mí, salsa.
Reggaeton.
Reggaeton. I knew it. Dance for fun or dance to express emotions?
Depends on the day. If most of the time, just dance to have fun. Horrible day, I'll dance to express.
Okay. Hey, good answer.
Fun all the time.
Reggaeton, of course. Every time is fun. Loud party vibe or deep emotional lyrics?
Party vibes for me, definitely, because I want to be happy.
Yes. Yes.
But I do appreciate the lyrics, and this is what I like about salsa, because, I mean, you guys can bash me all you want, but like, I'm getting sick of the constant love lyrics, because I hear that in pop music, I hear that in a lot of bachata music, I hear that in even in the Filipino music, it's mostly about love, but then when I listen to salsa music, you know, you listen to Joe Arroyo, it's La Rebellion, like they're talking about oh, no le pegue la negra. I was like, oh
no
my God.
That's when you hear that kind of, you know, videos in social media, like Latino people dancing a slavery song. Basically.
And there's also the song called Han Cogido la Cosa.
Sí, sí.
Yeah. Han Cogido la Cosa.
Dios mío, está perfecto, porque no puedo, o sea, I have to say it in Spanish, because we grew up listening that kind of music, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And like happily dancing that, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. If you don't know that words, it's like, oh, this is good.
Like, don't hit like, that lady. Yeah. No, no.
Yeah. It's like, what?
No, I'm laughing now, but we understand what is behind of that.
Oh, my gosh.
And last part. I will say my part in Spanish, because you are Spanish learners.
Oh, okay.
And so you have to choose one of these options. Hola, me llamo Zapato y tengo un año. Or, hola, me llamo Denise y tengo 30 y pico de años.
Hola, me llamo Denise.
Yeah! It was easy.
I don't think you're a shoe.
Yeah. Exacto. And the second option. I don't have a second option, honestly.
Oh. That's it? Muy fácil.
Okay.
Facilísimo.
Facilísimo. Entonces, sigamos en español. Thank you very much for joining me today. Gracias por estar aquí. I don't know if you want to say anything else that to share today.
Oh, no, that's it. But yeah, thank you for inviting us to come here and to you know, tell our story and about what we're doing.
Sorry, I have the last part. You have to say this. Can you hear? Can you read this? Sorry, just the last part. Gracias, Denise. This is the last. En español, por favor.
Gracias por entrevista, Denise. Es la periodista más chévere. Chao, amigos.
Ya escucharon, amigos, soy la periodista más chévere, así que compartan este video and see you in the next episode. Bye.
Bye. ¿Vamos a bailar?
Oh, that was awesome.
Qué bacán es poder llegar a tantas culturas desde el deseo de conectar. Cuando dejas tu país, o bueno, la tierra donde naciste, evidentemente nacen todas estas reflexiones de quiénes somos, a dónde vamos, por qué nos interesamos en lo que nos interesamos, ¿no? No sé dónde estés, dónde me estés escuchando, pero a veces tomamos las experiencias de quienes nos rodean de chiquito como verdades absolutas, y creo que los viajes y romper la zona de confort te trae esa reflexión de realmente quién quieres ser en la vida y qué es lo que quieres alcanzar. Es algo muy, una reflexión muy personal, ¿no? Pero creo que poco a poco de las historias que voy escuchando aquí en Aotearoa, mucho se revela eso, ¿no? Como cómo redescubrirse cuando todo lo que te definía como una persona ya no está. O sea, digo, como una persona en la que eras tú en tu país, y cambia mucho. Y a veces uno trata de volver a esa idea de quién era en su país. Evidentemente, si nunca has tenido la oportunidad aún de viajar o no te llama la atención, también es válido, ¿no? Aquí también viven muchos locales que nunca han salido de Nueva Zelanda y que pareciera para el que está afuera moviéndose a todo rato que estuviese detenido en el tiempo, pero para esa persona no. Para esa persona tú eres alguien nuevo que llega una vez más a su territorio y descubre lo que para él es lo común, ¿no? Así que bueno, en este espacio también que contaba yo de las buenas noticias, sin descartar las realidades y las dificultades que pasan en el mundo, pero y hay tantos espacios hablando de lo malo que creo que es productivo no entrar en un momento de negar lo que ocurre, pero sí de pronto prestar la atención en lo que nos puede hacer sentir mejor como seres humanos. Así que yo cachaba algunas noticias, obviamente, de la National Geographic, pero que caminar después de comer puede cambiar la forma en la que el cerebro y el cuerpo responden a los alimentos.
Y es muy cierto eso. Estos estudios recientes demuestran que incluso un movimiento, un solo movimiento suave puede, después de las comidas, puede influir en el control del azúcar en la sangre y en la señalización entre el intestino y el cerebro, lo que ayuda a que el cuerpo procese los nutrientes de forma mucho más eficiente. Así que ahora comer no solo respondería a las energías del cuerpo, sino que desencadena además una secuencia de cambios fisiológicos cuidadosamente sincronizados, especialmente en los minutos que siguen con una comida. Yo estoy compartiendo esa nota que me pareció súper bacán, ¿no? Entonces, ¿qué ocurre después de este intervalo, después de las comidas, y cómo podría un breve paseo ayudar a moldear este proceso? Entonces, lo que dice este estudio es que la digestión es un proceso activo que involucra a todo el cuerpo. Pero solo después de comer, nuestro cuerpo entra en un modo de descanso y digestión. Un periodo en que el intestino y el cerebro se comunican intensamente, intercambiando señales que influyen en la digestión, el estado de ánimo y los niveles del estrés. Los carbohidratos, las grasas y las proteínas se descomponen en glucosa, ácidos grasos y aminoácidos, que luego se liberan en el torrente sanguíneo. Obviamente esto es muy técnico, pero básicamente habla de que el ejercicio después de comer hace, ¿qué puede hacer el ejercicio después de comer en tu cerebro, ¿no? Entonces, cuando te mueves, incluso en un paseo tranquilo, los músculos se contraen, lo que ayuda a extraer el azúcar del torrente sanguíneo y llevarlo a las células. Este proceso se produce independientemente de la insulina, lo que resulta especialmente útil para las personas mayores, lo que las personas con resistencia a la insulina, por ejemplo, o cualquiera que cene abundantemente, ya que la insulina tiende a funcionar con menos eficacia. Así que es muy beneficioso para el metabolismo y te puede obviamente contribuir. Ahora, ¿cuándo y cómo moverse después de una comida? No es necesario que el momento sea exacto, explican los expertos. Moverse unos 30 minutos después de dejar el tenedor puede ser el momento ideal, pero señala que los beneficios comienzan tan pronto como las personas empiezan a moverse. Estos expertos señalan que se puede añadir movimiento a cualquier momento del día y puede mejorar la sensibilidad de la insulina. Así que bacán, a veces son cosas tan chiquitas, que hábitos tan chiquitos, que a veces uno dice, no, ¿para qué? Yo después de comer, o no. O la gente que incluso le cuesta empezar a hacer deporte, y con que tú muevas tu cuerpo ya entre semana, no sé, 30 minutos, dicen los expertos, te puede cambiar. Así que bacán. Una noticia súper bacán también que ocurrió en mi país durante esos últimos meses es que después de 175 años, las tortugas gigantes de Galápagos regresaron a casa, al archipiélago donde estuvo Darwin. Para nosotros, las Galápagos es parte de nuestra identidad, así que es tan bacán, no sé, como la divulgación de ciencia y de los datos y de cómo funciona la naturaleza es tan extraordinario que a veces... A mí me pasa mucho cuando consumo muchos documentales o leo mucho de ciencia, que me hace conectarme como con el motivo del mundo, ¿no? A veces estamos tan distraídos con las redes sociales y hay tanta gente haciendo trabajos tradicionales aún, como científicos, doctores, biólogos, incluso los periodistas, que hacemos todavía un trabajo de campo, que estamos con la gente y no solo repitiendo contenido viral en redes sociales para facturar, que obviamente siempre es hermoso facturar, pero digo, siempre está esa reflexión de buscar algo que tenga sentido, ¿no? Así que todos estos documentales señalan además que hay muchas más expediciones al espacio públicas, pero realmente no se conoce lo que hay en el océano y es loquísimo, la verdad. Así que bueno, estas tortugas, esto fue en la isla Floriana en Ecuador. 9 hombres caminan en fila en India como un ejército, dice la National Geographic, marchando cuesta arriba bajo el sol ecuatorial con cajas de plásticos de 45 kilos atadas a la espalda. Dentro de la caja se encuentran las preciosas tortugas gigantes de las Islas Galápagos. Cuando finalmente coronan la cresta, un camino salpicado de rocas, de lava afilada y conos de ceniza geológicamente activos, están empapados de sudor, pero no descansan ni se detienen. Colocan cuidadosamente las cajas en el suelo y comienzan el verdadero trabajo. Así que hace pocos meses, estas 50 tortugas gigantes, 158 en total en los próximos días de lo que ocurrió, Fueron liberados 600, están en el centro de cría del Parque de la Isla Santa Cruz. Estas tortugas en las cajas aún no son gigantes, tienen entre 7 y 15 años y pesan entre 4.5 y 18 kilos. También son híbridas de la especie de la tortuga floriana, ahora extinta lastimosamente, y poseen linajes tanto de la tortuga de Floriana como de la tortuga del volcán Wolf. Algunas de las híbridas también tienen genes de especies que se encuentran en la Isla Santiago y española de la región. Durante los últimos 15 años, en un programa de crías, se ha creado, valga decir, la redundancia, 720 nuevas tortugas híbridas de Floriana, cuyo último paso para volver a la naturaleza dependen de que Sevilla y su equipo los transporten en esta calurosa mañana de febrero. Sevilla, obviamente, estamos hablando de este con experto. Así que me parece tan bacán. Disculpen, estoy un poco resfriada. Así que 10 de las 22 especies también se habla de cómo en la isla Floriana, el lugar de las tortugas gigantes, pero también ese día fue un centro neurálgico de balleneros y piratas, fue la primera isla de Galápagos en ser colonizada. Los humanos no solo trajeron ratas y gatos, sino que también trajeron caballos, vacas, cerdos, perros, burros y cabras. Animales que superaron en competencia o mataron a los animales autóctonos. 10 de las 22 aves de aves han extinguido en Floriana desde la llegada de las personas, según hablan los expertos y los investigadores allí. Obviamente, ¿por qué es importante hablar de esto? Porque es nuestro mundo, básicamente, ¿no? Entonces, así como queremos que se tomen buenas decisiones políticas, hay gente que sigue trabajando para básicamente mantener el ecosistema activo, que es donde vivimos. Yo no digo que no sea... Yo he cubierto mucho a política y me encanta la política y leo mucho de política, de leyes, etcétera. Pero sí, con el paso del año, siento que a veces esos distractores nos hacen olvidar del motivo de la existencia del mundo, ¿no? De cómo te instalan a estudiar ciertas cosas que tienen que ser partícipa y te alejan completamente, haciendo que cierta información sea súper privilegiada. Entender cómo una orca hace su viaje de polo a polo, o entender qué es lo que podemos hacer para contribuir a un mundo mejor, o cómo es lo básico de las acciones que nos diferencian como seres humanos. Así que bueno, son las reflexiones a esta altura de la vida en Aló Aotearoa. Quiero agradecer a todos quienes escriben. Se vienen un montón de cosas divertidas aquí en Nueva Zelanda, como festivales, encuentros de latinos, también de la comunidad. Así que estén pendientes también de las redes de los diferentes trusts latinos, porque siempre publican cosas súper interesantes para la comunidad, como clases. Incluso nosotros también vamos a estar estrenando brevemente en el Waikato Hispano Latino Trust clases de inglés si estás en Hamilton después de las 6 de la tarde, que nos pareció un horario súper bacán para que la gente pueda sumarse, y que son gratuitas y además dictadas por una persona local. Así que les invito a que sigan las redes del Waikato Hispano Latino Trust, también de Aotearoa, que estaremos compartiendo información siempre relevante para la comunidad. Yo no te digo que sea la única, pero sí es una información que está pensada para sumar a la comunidad. Igual nos puedes escribir si estás haciendo alguna cosa bacana, tienes un emprendimiento, quieres ser parte de este podcast, la invitación siempre está abierta. Ahora les quiero presentar una entrevista súper bacán también, porque este podcast también, como bien les he dicho, busca conectar con otras comunidades, y esta es una gran colega, bueno, no colega, sino compañera de trabajo, que la vida me cruzó y que tiene su emprendimiento de comida nepalí. Ella se llama Jenny y con su pareja se estacionan los fines de semana en el Hamilton Lake, y tienen comida súper rica nepalesa. Así que bueno, esta entrevista está en inglés, pero Jenny está aprendiendo un poquito de español, así que intenta conectarse con nuestra lengua, y te invito a que te conectes y escuches con esto, amigos. Hola amigos de Aotearoa, sigo recorriendo la ciudad de Hamilton y un poco también de la cultura en Nueva Zelanda, y
ya es conocido mundialmente que es una tierra bastante diversa, con bastantes extranjeros también de diferentes partes del mundo. Así que yo hago esta pequeña intro que siempre invito a toda la comunidad latina a conectarse con Aloha Taroa. Salimos en vivo todos los sábados a las 7 de la noche por Free FM 89.0, por la radio comunitaria de Hamilton, pero también en redes sociales. Así que les invito a que se conecten. Me río porque estoy con una compañera de trabajo que la verdad es una emprendedora. Así que bueno, ahora obviamente porque el idioma que nos conecta es el inglés, vamos a we are just doing this interview in English and I am just at the Momo house
for chat
in Sid. It takes time to learn the name, but how are you, Jenny? Just explain everyone where you from and how you start this journey, and you have now your food truck here in New Zealand.
Firstly, hola, ¿cómo estás?
amigos.
Amigos. Español, un poco.
Poquito. That's perfect.
Yeah, I'm still learning.
How did your journey take you from Nepal to New Zealand, Jenny?
I'm originally from Nepal, and then I came here in 2022 end, and then you know, we used to have lots of like food, like a momo, chow mein. So these are like a street food, very famous in Nepal, back in Nepal. And then it's been like our childhood, you know, we just having those foods. And then when I came here, like I didn't find those.
You didn't find your food. And that's one of the most important things when you're trying to get like connected.
You know, you want to connect everyone and you see like in New Zealand, for me was like, you know, cultural, like things were different, like everything was different, like compared back in my home country. And then we just, you know, me and my husband, we just thought of like, why don't we do our own momo stuff in here so that we can, you know, provide this to Nepalese community as well. And then, you know, spread in here to all our New Zealand people as well, community as well. So that's how like we started.
And why Hamilton? It was like a huge difference, like Nepal and New Zealand. Someone that never heard about Nepal.
Because my, you know, husband, actually he was already here in Hamilton. And then that's why like we were like here. He was actually supposed to go to Auckland, but due to the COVID, he was stuck here in Hamilton. And then I think it was a destiny, you know, to be here and then to meet you guys and then to, you know,
start. This smart and beautiful person. No, I'm joking. But what's Momo House? What's Momo House offer to anyone that wants to try Nepal food?
Yeah, so actually the Momo name, it's a community, Newa community in Nepal. Like it, the words derived from their language in Nepali, and then so the, you know, the momo, the English name we call it dumplings. Mm-hmm. So those are, you see the fold. So for it's like folded like a sari. So sari is like a piece of like clothing in Nepal, like we use to wear the females.
Okay.
And that's how, because it's folded, the momo as well, like sari, that's why I think the concept came from there.
And what the people, there is a lot of culture here and local food as well. What do you expect when someone is trying your food?
Like
what is the expectation of these people? They say, okay, that's nice.
We have like lots of, because momo is now not only in Nepal, it's like, you know, to India, like Sri Lanka, like everywhere, like in South Asia, and it's mostly popular now. So we have lots of people like our South Asian countries mostly, but we do have peoples from here as well. And yeah, we have like all kind of communities here. And then
So what is their favorite?
Their favorite, like flavor, what?
Plate, or what do people ask every time that come?
Like they will ask for, like normally we just give like momo and then the chow mein. So chow mein is also like a stir fried noodles, street food. So mostly they ask like a steamed one, the chicken steamed, and then the veg paneer steamed momo. Yeah. Oh,
and have you tried ever in your time like Latin food, not like Mexican or nachos or?
Yeah, I have. I love tacos. I love nachos.
Nachos. Yeah, that's popular.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you think that there is any relation with that?
Yeah, yeah. Common is like, you know, I think you have like a. It's a spiciness, or you know, the spiciness and the chili, and we also do the same. So I think there is exactly.
And now the price, Jenny, because the cost of living.
it's
hitting everyone.
Yeah, it's actually increasing. So we have a price range at the moment. It's like $10 to $20, I would say, for now. Yeah, but it's been like 2 years, so. We are trying to work on the menu and the pricing and everything, as also like, you know, compared to the living price and everything. Yeah.
And how long you been here in New Zealand? It was hard to get connected with the culture, you know, the language, the food, work, everything.
Yeah. I think at first it was because I was new here, and then, you know, I didn't have more friends or not connected to the community. But like later I find my own community, as well as people here in New Zealand, like they are very nice and open, and they support the, you know, local business. So yeah, it was like bit of difficult first few months, but afterward like it was good.
Thank you very much, Jenny, for joining me today. My videos are flying. Now, just can you just invite everyone just to visit you here at the Hamilton Lake?
We're at the Hamilton Lake near the hockey playground. Opened Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 5 to 8:30 p.m. And you can find us on Instagram as well as Nepali Momo House NZ. And we serve like handmade, authentic and delicious Nepali momo and chow mein. Yeah.
Thank you. Gracias, Jenny.
Gracias,
amigos.
Hasta luego.
Les invitamos a que, bueno, sigan conociendo y cachando también qué hacen las comunidades, diferentes comunidades que viven no solo en Hamilton, sino alrededor de Nueva Zelanda. Pero lo curioso de Hamilton es que son más de 140 culturas conviviendo día a día en esta ciudad, que es la cuarta más grande de Nueva Zelanda, pero la primera en que se está expandiendo con brevedad. Eso dicen los conocedores, no lo digo yo, sino los conocedores del tema. Y nada, le invito a que se conecte a un próximo episodio y que nos siga también por las redes de Aotearoa. Adiós.
Adiós.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.